Justin.
I am Pete.
And you are listening to Comic Book Club on a boat or here in the audience. Let's get a big round of applause from you guys.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much.
And look, we just set sail. The Mark Waid podcast started, and then we said goodbye to Key West.
Yeah, Key West was like, get out of here, podcast. No thanks. We're not interested. But thank you guys so much for coming out. We do a regular show every Tuesday in New York at 8 p.m., but we're very excited to do it on a boat.
Yeah.
How's the boat treating you guys so far?
You know, it's great. Like I said before, I want to try one of these, the alcoholic beverages. Apparently they have some of those here. There's a bar. I haven't seen it yet, but I'm looking forward to trying.
Oh, man, it's going to be great. Alex, I just want to say, you know, when you were interviewing your kids up here before, they sat through in depth, like really well done. You know.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah. We didn't actually record it, but for those of you at home, just know that we spent far too long interviewing my children. So there you go. That's like a bonus episode just for a boat.
You, the hard-hitting questions you asked your son was devastating.
You should see what our home life is like. It's bad.
It's
Do you know what's not bad, though, is our amazing guest. We're very excited to have him here. Always like to talk to him, and he's one of the most prolific comic book writers of all time. Ladies and gentlemen, Mark Waid!
Thank you. Now, please sit down. Please sit down.
Thank you so much for coming here. What has your Comic-Con cruise experience been like?
It's been great so far. It's been great. There is gambling. Shocked. I'm shocked. They're gambling.
Imagine that.
And there are a few alcoholic beverages to be had.
Yep.
But mostly it's been very cool that you see comic book fans around, but they don't intrude on your space, and you don't intrude on their space. But it's still relaxed enough where, you know, walking up and just shaking hands or at dinner. You know, basically they try to mingle us at dinner where they kind of put us all at the same table, a few pros, a few fans, and just then kind of rotate us through so that we can make sure that we make contact with everybody. That's a lot of fun.
Yeah, and cool. You've been to so many comic book conventions at this point. Is this more insular in a way? Is it different other than
In a way, it's the physical space that makes it. That there is no central watering hole for us. There is no, there's no dealer's room. There isn't a dealer's room, is there?
Well, yeah. There's a dealer's room. We found a casino.
We found Mark's vice, I think.
There's no central watering hole or anything, so it's gigantic, five times the size of San Diego convention, right?
Yeah.
Six times. And so it's, insular is not quite the right word, but it is harder to connect with fans. But this is why I was looking forward to an event like this or a master class on Sunday or something, because that's more of the contact.
Yeah.
And while there isn't a central watering hole, Pete and I found last night you can just go to all of them.
That's true.
if you need to, and then...
Did you do alphabetical or by deck or what?
Oh, we were very meticulous at first, and then I think we just stumbled places. There's a way to say it. Before we go on too, what we should say, when we get on a cruise, you have to go through this deal where you learn about how to get on the lifeboats, and Mark, Pete, and I are in the same lifeboat.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, so don't worry. If the ship goes down, we will continue this interview. Alex is going down with a ship.
I'm the captain.
I'm the captain now.
Yes, there we go. Good Captain Phillips reference. Cool. Mark, you're always working on a ridiculous amount of projects. You're doing mostly stuff for Marvel right now,
mostly stuff for Marvel, but a lot more stuff at Archie Comics coming up. So,
this dude over here in particular, we all like the Archie Comics. He loves the Archie Comics.
It's so good. It's
good, man. Thanks.
And I wanted to say specifically, everything, the book is so great, but I love your, the back matter. I would read a book of just you curating Archie Comics from the whole history. It's so satisfying.
Every month they give me some obscure Archie story from the 1940s, and half the fun of it is just trying to source what some of these words mean.
Yeah, exactly.
What the hell does this mean, Rudy Patootie? Was that a saying? Was it something they said?
Just nonsense. Yeah. Well, I love you're also like, this panel doesn't make any sense to me or anyone
else. Or anyone else. But
amazing.
So the Archie Comics, they've been in a state of almost constant reinvention, I think, for the past couple of years, which is kind of fantastic. But you were at the forefront of this not horror, but more mainstreamish reinvention of them. So how did you approach it? What was the thought process when you were coming at Archie number one?
It was, I mean, it was intimidating at first because they called me up and they asked me to relaunch. And I knew they were serious when they said they got Fiona Staples to do the art because that meant a shot across the bow. Like, I wasn't interested in coming and trying to reinvent it or relaunch it if it was going to be, you know, the same look that they had before. And that's not a slight on any of the artists, but it wouldn't have sent that, like I said, it wouldn't have sent that signal that we're serious about restarting. So they call me up, and the first thing I said was, you know, I'm 53 years old, right? But they were insistent, and I looked at the material, and I really, the thought process was concentrating less on trying to update it in terms of slang, in terms of what kids are saying right this second, you know, because it would be easy and cheap to just use the words Instagram and Tumblr, you know, and this thing, World of Warcraft, whatever, but that stuff dates. You know, 5 years from now, that stuff will be dated. So what I was concentrating mostly on was the universal feelings of teenagers. The fact that the stuff that, you know, obviously my high school experience is not the same as your high school experience, is not the same as your high school experience, but there's things that are always constant. Your first love, you know, your first kiss, the first time you screw up in front of everybody and you think it's the end of the world. That kind of stuff. That remembering that high school is grand opera, right? Everything is huge. And once I started wrapping my head around that, then I just started looking at the characters and seeing sort of how they fit. Another thing I really approached was, at first I was very adamant about trying to give Archie something himself, Archie Andrews, something special about him because he is such a bland character in and of himself, whereas everybody else has a thing, right? Everybody else has some, you know, Veronica's rich, Reggie's the bully, Jughead's the Zen master. So you want, you know, and I was looking for something to make Archie stand out. And the more I thought about it, the more I thought, no, he's the hub of the wheel, right?
Yeah.
He's the thing that everybody else revolves around. And so he needs to be a typical American teenager without any specific unusual qualities. And that's why I had him narrate the book, because that was a way of getting us into his head and introducing him and making us like him right off the bat without having to decide that he's got, you know, some weird thing. So
plus he's always like, I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
It's like his like default position.
Yeah. I always say if Archie doesn't have his head stuck in a bucket in the issue somewhere, then I've screwed up. Then it's got to go to time for a rewrite.
Yeah. Very updated reference, head in a bucket. Very fresh. I had a head in my head.
Oh, wait,
in a bucket
he rolls down the hill in a barrel of molasses next month. And so again, I was thinking, how long have they... When was the last time they put molasses in a barrel? Yeah. I don't know.
I buy all my molasses by the barrel.
It's one of those universal experiences. Right. Like falling
exactly. Yeah. Like first kiss, first rolling down the hill in a barrel of molasses. Yeah.
So beyond Archie, and I know you don't necessarily write these, but there's a bunch of other titles that have spun off newer looks at the universe. What's the coordination like on those books? Are you involved at all?
No, it's non-existent, which is actually kind of cool. And it's not, if that were Marvel or DC, that would be a detriment. But because it's Archie, one of the great things about Archie comics for 75 years is that there's no continuity. It's like The Simpsons, right? There's consistency, but there's no continuity. In one issue, Jughead will be a girl hater, and the next one he's dating. In one issue, Archie will be the captain of the football team, and the next one he's the water boy. And that's always been the case with Archie comics forever. And so when we thought about this, we thought about when Chip relaunched Jughead and some of the other, and Adam Hughes did Betty and Veronica, we thought, well, maybe we should get together and sort of make sure we're all feeding into each other. And then we thought, nah, that just makes it more creatively stagnant.
Nah, let's... I mean, I agree that, and there's some tonal differences between the books, but I think it's great. I like that. I look forward to that. Like, oh, this is the one that's like this,
right?
Same characters, but
yeah. Let Jughead be Jughead.
Yeah.
Do you have any opinions on Riverdale?
Actually, I have. I do have one, which is I've only seen the first episode, and I think the actors are really good. I think the material was good. because I read the script. The material was good, but the actors really elevated the material. Oh, wow. I haven't seen anything past there, so we'll see.
All right, very cool. And otherwise, you are working on a bunch of Marvel things. So you have Champions, which is one of my favorite books coming out right now.
Yeah.
Again, really capturing the youth of the nation.
Did I hear a really tiny woo from the audience from somebody?
There you go.
Okay, whoa. I'll take it.
Well, so it's a team book, and usually you bring together the teen kid for very different reasons.
Yeah.
This one has a very specific and, I think, very different than usual reason.
Yeah.
How'd you come at this book?
It was offered to me because we talked about splitting Miles and Nova and Kamala, Ms. Marvel, into away from the Avengers was an editorial decision. And then they decided we want to give them a book. Are you interested in writing it? Well, yes, because I love writing those three. I actually enjoyed writing those three Avengers more than I enjoyed writing the other Avengers. Wow. And then we started talking about what if we did a team book? What if we gathered some of the other younger characters in the Marvel Universe and concentrated not on supervillains and not on the typical things that a superhero team deals with, but more on social issues, more on changing the world one step at a time? And so we got, you know, Hulk, obviously, who I like, Cyclops, who I love. My goal is to make people like Cyclops. Keep
reading,
pal. Yeah. It's gonna
that would
happen.
Be impressive if you could get me to like Cyclops.
I can make you like Cyclops, and then and Viv Vision, the daughter of the Vision. Yeah. So that's been it's been good. It's harder than I thought, and it's interesting because you know it's easy to say well, we're going to have a bunch of teenage heroes, you know, be social activists and make the world a better place. But the reality is, and I realize this about halfway through issue 3, where they go and deal with, you know, a problem with a Muslim country dealing with terrorist attacks there from outside toward the Muslim community. Our guys are Americans. Our guys are Americans, and I can't write a story in which the American imperialists come in and solve the problem for you. And that was a wake-up call for me as I went into it. You would have thought I would have thought of that earlier. That's the tightrope I have to dance every issue, is that they can go in and recognize problems, hate crimes, whatever. I think that's issue 5 is hate crime stuff. But they can't solve anything. They may be able to solve it on a smaller scale. If it's a domestic issue, I have less problem with them taking active action than I do if it's a foreign issue. But they can't, you know, you solve one problem in one city, it's not enough to make a difference. So that's what gave us the idea of making the Champions not a group but a movement. There where they're encouraging young people, or anybody, but specifically young people around the nation to pick up the flag, to pick up the insignia, and follow their lead. And so that's, you know, so we'll see in upcoming issues, there's just more and more of that happening where it's becoming a movement across the nation and young people are taking action and making a difference.
Awesome. That's great. Getting that molasses back in the barrel.
That was a much longer answer than you were looking for.
No, it's great.
That's great. One other thing that I really like about the book, and I don't know if this is from you or editorially or exactly what's going on, but it always starts with a big, shocking splash page.
Yeah.
And then immediately goes to the title page, the credits, and then it gets into the story.
That was Umberto.
Oh, okay.
I did it in the first couple of issues, and Umberto said, let's keep this going. Because I really like that, and I do. I like that a lot, too.
Yeah. What was the thought process behind it?
I think Umberto, he just liked both of us liked the idea of starting with a splash page rather than a text page with what has gone on before and a really strong visual image. And as long as we can keep with the really strong visual images, we'll keep doing it.
Awesome. Cool.
Something you tackle, I know, very differently is Black Widow with Chris Samnee.
Yes.
Now, I know originally, I believe originally you guys were almost doing it Marvel style, or you were letting Chris take the lead.
Oh, yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah,
and is
that
still going on that
still,
way?
It kind of, depending upon Chris's schedule, it kind of vacillates back and forth. I think with the last two issues, I've done more of a traditional plot after we've talked it out. But by and large, you know, for the first half dozen issues especially, it was, you know, Chris, here's what, you know, we talk about it, and Chris, here's where we need to start, and here's where we need to end, and then I just get 22 pencil pages back, or 20 pages back to look at, wow. and a dialogue, and that's a blast, because he is a really strong storyteller.
It's one of my favorite books out right
now.
It is amazing. And it's also very intense with the stuff that Black Widow is doing. I mean, the fact that, like, she's got all this stuff going on, and the fact that, like, she's turning on her own team for a bigger kind of goal.
Yeah.
It's intense, man. I've really loved it.
Thanks. That's all Chris, dude. I mean, I'll take a little tiny bit of credit, but that is 99% Chris. Wow.
Had you ever worked in the Marvel style? By the way, we should mention, for those who don't know what Marvel style is, could you?
Yeah, sure. I mean, Marvel style, which is, we call that way because Stan Lee used to work this way in the 50s and 60s, which is how he wrote 8 zillion comic books. he would do like a paragraph on, here's what the story is, here's the basic beats, artist, take it. And the artist would then have to go and basically pace it out and come up with some of the intermediary beats and so forth. So the artist was a co-writer as much as anything else. So I've done that. I've done that a bunch of times. Michael Ringo and I used to work that way on Fantastic Four. As long as I'm working with a very strong storyteller, I'm very comfortable doing that. You can't do it with every artist, because it has to be somebody that you have a regular gig with, so you get the rhythm going, and you make sure that you're that way. You can trust each other. It's like any partnership that way. But with Chris in particular, it's just very freeing. We did a little bit with Daredevil too, where it was just, I'd get to sections where I know Chris could choreograph this fight scene or this action scene better than I could. There's no point in me sitting down and going, panel one, he does this, panel two, he does this, because Chris will just want to choreograph it in his own way, and he would do it. And again, just a beautiful job.
You're also working on Avengers, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, which you just finished, I think it just finished the Kang storyline.
Just finished one Kang storyline.
It feels like there's a lot of Kang coming our way.
There's a lot of Kang. Here's the thing, the guy can travel through time. He can hit you anytime he wants, so I love that about Kang. More Kang coming up.
There have been so many Kang stories in the history of Avengers, though. So when you're tackling a new Kang story, do you just have a list of Kang ideas?
I really do. Yeah, I really do. As an inveterate Doctor Who fan, that helps enormously too, right? And playing with, and I've always loved time travel. I mean, as a concept, as a subgenre, right up there with it's deals with the devil. Time travel. Those are the two things that I will read no matter what. And so I've got, I think, some unusual and freakish ideas for Kang in the next couple of issues that I know we've never seen before.
Yeah. That's cool, because the last arc was very much like, there's Kang, he's traveling through time, we're going through time, time's messed up, we're fine, time's still messed up. But like, it was a very like classic, let's screw around with time.
Yeah.
So you're moving further into something else.
Yeah, the next issue starts with his defeat, and then issues 5 and 6 show how we got to his defeat. And it's all time stuff, and it's all like finding a planet of people who are mining time out of, you know, like taking it out of objects, taking it out of people. And if he takes time out of you, he's not aging you. What he's doing is he's taking your future away. That's the little tiny taste of what we're doing.
I'll just mention, for those of you who didn't read it, and this is going to spoil the heck out of it, but I love the arc so much, it just starts in the first issue, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
So Vision steals baby Kang and puts him away so that he'll never become Kang. So Kang, who's a total asshole, proceeds to be like, you know what, I'm going to kill every single one of the Avengers as babies.
Yeah.
And that's it. And then they're dead.
Yeah.
And it was such, I was talking with some people online about this a little bit. It's such a typical Kang asshole move. Like, it's so small and petty of it.
Because he could kill them as teenagers. He could kill them yesterday. But no, he's going to kill them as infants, because you stole me as an infant. So I will, you know, give you back in kind. Yeah.
That was a great story. What else are you working on? Anything else right now?
I think that's it. It's really hard to say. I've been doing a lot of consulting work for Riot Games, the guys who do League of Legends.
Mm-hmm.
And they're doing some comic book stuff. And so I've been helping them get that off the ground. And I'll be doing a little bit of that writing-wise. God, I know there's more. But that's, you know, that's the big beats right now. Oh, the Avengers Retro book with Barry Kitson, the one that's basically set right in between Avengers 16 and 17 from 1963, when it's Cap, Scarlet Witch, Quicksilver, and Hawkeye. And they're the Avengers. And really sort of deep diving into what that team would really be like and how they came together.
Awesome. Wow. Now, this is something that actually came up on one of our shows back in New York the other day. We were talking about motion comics and how they've developed or not. You are, for those listening at home, Mark gave a little bit of a shake about that.
Yeah.
I mean, what is happening there? What is not happening there? You were very much at the forefront and very much pushing that forward. And I think it's fair to say it hasn't necessarily revolutionized
the industry. There's a difference between what we were doing in motion comics. Motion comics are the devil's tool. Motion comics are just cheap animation, right? They're actually putting motion into stuff. What we were doing was more, and are doing, still Thrillbent's up and running as a site, and so what we're still doing with Thrillbent is playing around with things that you can do in digital you can't do in print, which, by the way, is very well explained in a podcast, audially. So, in other words,
this is great. Yeah.
I know. By the way, we put up 13 diagrams. I know. You guys,
I try to tell you what an elephant looks like. it's, you know, with the first off, with digital comics, you use the space, and that space is landscape format, not portrait format, because most of the reading that people are doing overseas specifically is on the computer screen or on the laptop screen or on our in the pad use. Tablet use is virtually non-existent in countries like Korea and countries like China. Everybody's doing either mobile phone or they're doing desktop reading. So portrait format makes sense to me. Not portrait format, I mean, a landscape format makes sense. As Scott McCloud is fond of saying, that's how we see the world. That's why we have eyes on, and not like one eye on top of the other. Right. You know? But that's one way of doing it. The other thing is we're using not tricks so much, but being able to play with balloons that fade in and out, or artwork that you see one piece of art and then another piece on the click, you know, on the scroll, or another piece of art shows up. And it gives the first piece of art some new meaning and some new context. Again, it's really hard to explain, you know, over a microphone. But it hasn't really caught on yet. I don't know that it will. I am surprised that print comics have succeeded as well as they have in the last 4 or 5 years. I'm happy.
Yeah,
but I kind of—if you'd asked me 5 years ago, I would have thought print comics were on the ropes, and this is kind of what we'd be doing. So,
All right, there we go. All right, guys, so we're going to open it up to you guys for questions. Pete's going to come out to you, give you guys some stickers if you ask a question. But anything you got for this guy, Mark Wade, just raise your hand, and Pete will come out to you. Absolutely, anybody. No, yes, yeah, right. You, ma'am, right there.
Great.
Definitely not a Black Widow fan.
Oh. No, not at all.
Absolutely not.
No.
Politics have always played a part in comics, so how do you find the line between having a say and having a political view and wanting to tell that to your audience without shoving it down their throat or alienating audiences?
It's a really good question,
nice.
And it is really hard this week.
Yeah,
really hard. But the way, if it's your own comic, if it's something that you own, your creator-owned comic, then, you know, have at. You know, but if you're working on a Marvel comic or a DC comic, the way you have to do it is you have to sort of, we just call it Marvelizing it. In other words, sort of taking a real world situation and creating a fantasy situation out of that that's evocative of this, but it's not a direct comment on that. You wouldn't do a direct comment on Donald Trump. You would just create a crazy orange president.
Or just make Kang do something
very Kang. Exactly.
Just but, like,
yeah. Does that kind of answer the question? By the way, not to put the fear of God into any of you, but if we get into a trade war with China, then your comics are going to cost twice as much. because that's where a lot of the printing happens. So just be aware. Thank you.
Oh, man, what a bummer.
I know. I know. Just, I thought I'd bring down the room. Thank you.
Yeah, we went on a cruise to maybe get away from politics a little bit.
Yeah, well, today's not the day.
Today's not the day. I was not, while Pete's finding the next person for the good question, I was a little sad that our phones all turned back on today because I was looking forward to just being off Wi-Fi for a while.
I know.
Didn't happen. Pete, you got a question back there?
Hey, Mark, we know you're the king of comic trivia. Are you going to challenge everybody inside the room to the comic pub quiz on Sunday?
I think that's probably a good idea. It would be cruel of me to be there as a contestant because then you're all doomed. But wow. But I will certainly flit in and out, yes.
When it comes to comic trivia, do you have an area of expertise?
Silver Age stuff, okay. Yeah. Anything, my rule of thumb is anything I discovered after I discovered girls, I'm not so keen on. Like, I don't remember that as well.
You read it with a little different focus after.
Exactly,
that.
Yes. Perhaps I didn't have time to reread every. I had a ritual when I was a kid. I would read a comic and I would read it immediately one more time just to sort of imprint it in my brain.
Really? Oh, wow.
And then I would take a 3x5 index card and I would write everything about the comic, the artist, the writer, the synopsis of the story, everything possible, and I would file it away. And, and then I discovered girls. So,
and you like that better than writing those notes?
I just want to make sure.
Depends on the day.
Just to make sure you didn't do the same thing with girls, right?
No, I don't.
That's creepy.
It's a little creepy.
All right. Good. We got another question over here.
Other than Superman, what other comic book would you like to write at the moment?
I like the fact that you said other than Superman because that's my default answer. Yeah. I don't know. At Marvel, there's not much left to tackle because I've done pretty much it. I haven't written Iron Man. I haven't written Thor, but I don't want to write Thor. And Iron Man is, you know, locked down for, I think, forever with Bendis. So I don't know. If they did, if Fantastic Four came back, I would be fighting tooth and nail to get that. At DC, it's funny. I have never had a run on Superman or Batman or Wonder Woman. I've written them as Justice Leaguers or here and there as guest stars, but I've never had like a Batman run. That might be fun. But Superman.
Scott Snyder is actually on board this boat, so you can fight him.
Not anymore. He's not.
Oh.
A terrible accent. I'm sorry. He just fell off. He fell off the side.
Oh, weird. So strange. And now you're on Batman. Yeah.
I know. And now there's there's a vacancy. I don't understand.
Why? Tragic. You may have talked about this a lot before, and I just haven't heard it. Why not Thor?
Same reason. Not Wonder Woman. I'm not a magical, mystical minded kind of guy. I grew up. I have an appreciation for myth, but I grew up as a science guy. And that's where I did all my college work, you know, minored in physics and stuff. And so I have an appreciation for it, but my love is for science-based characters.
Got it. Do we have another question? You, sir, right over there. What's your name? What's your question?
Hey, Mark, I'm Jeff.
Hey, Jeff.
Might be a little above your pay grade, but is it about digital comics?
I'm sorry, one more time?
It's about digital comics.
Okay.
What's going on with Marvel and they're kind of abandoning that? With giving away the free digital comic.
Oh, I don't.
Books.
You know, I don't know. That's above my pay grade. I know that they've stopped doing digital releases free in their comics, but instead they're offering other comics digital released. I don't know.
Here's my guess, and again, above your pay grade, but somebody was asking me about this on Twitter. So for those of you who don't know, they had that sticker in every single comic where you could redeem it for a digital copy. Now the idea is you get a code if you buy a comic, and you can get a couple of related comics. So, you know, if you're picking up this is just not true, but if you're picking up Captain America, maybe you get a copy of the Sam Wilson comic book so you can see related what's going on there, something like that. My guess is it's just more expensive to print a specific code with a sticker in every single comic book.
That's a very good point.
Yeah,
that's a very good
point. That's my thought. So I think instead you print the same thing in every comic book, and then you're able to give the same thing to everybody. But I could be wrong. Cool. Again, I don't actually know one way or the other.
I guess sticker prices are out of control.
Yeah, don't buy stickers, you guys. Do we have any more questions over here? Absolutely anything for Mr. Mark Wade. Right. Yes, we have a couple of questions right back there. Pete's walking. He's walking, if you're listening at home.
He's got to get his sea legs.
Yes.
Right. It was a big surprise to see you singing karaoke yesterday.
Oh.
Is that... Are you a regular with karaoke? And what are your favorite songs, your go-to songs to
Well,
pick?
some pipsqueak Q-tip kid ran off with Dream On early on and swiped my song. So... Because that's my go-to. I'm not really a regular.
Well, good news. Mark's going to sing Dream On right now.
Right now, yeah. Exactly.
Hit it!
I can carry a tune. No one's going to put me on America's Got Talent, but I can carry a tune. Thank you. Wait, did you say I was good? I don't remember if you said I was good. Okay, thank you.
Terrible.
Wait, so what did you actually
sing? I led with Midnight Confessions, which is my warm-up song, and also a good one because no one in the audience is old enough to know what that song is. And then...
Humpty Dance?
Kentucky Woman. There you go.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
For someone that doesn't sing a lot of karaoke, you have a warm-up song? Is that what... You're just like, I don't really do it. Well, my warm-up song, I did this. Yeah. My six-song set list was pretty strong.
And if you guys want, I have a gig later on tonight. You should check out.
Check it out. Cool. Yeah. Wow, this is why you get on the cruise, is the way karaoke info.
Yeah, we got a question right over here. What's your name? What's your question?
I'm Mark. I'm Brian.
Hey.
You're so prolific, and you've done so many great characters and all. How do you feel when you see those characters, be it the Avengers or the Justice League or Daredevil or what it be it, put onto TV and film and those things, particularly when it's something that is a particular storyline that you did or something along those lines?
It's great. I mean, I know it's the expected answer, but I have a more complex answer. It's really great. The first thing I get asked by a lot of people when that happens is, do they pay you? Do you get money for that? And a lot of times you don't. Sometimes you do. They actually sent me a nice check for Man of Steel.
Wow.
To make up for my my pain and anguish. And there's certain, if your character shows up in a TV show or something, there's a little bit of money. It's not buy a yacht money. It's more like, ooh, extra cheese pizza, money. Yeah. But it's the thought that counts. They certainly have the right... Marvel and DC, certainly they have the right to do whatever they want to with your material. So rather than be upset about the fact that I don't think I'm being compensated fairly for, and I do, but I'm saying, but if I felt like I wasn't being fairly compensated, it's outweighed by the fact that I can watch Flash and see them talk about the Speed Force and I just light up like a Christmas tree whenever that happens, or when they bring on Savitar, or when they're doing Terminal Velocity as their next story arc, yeah. And that just makes me so happy. That's something that I'll remember forever. If you handed me a check for a couple $1,000, I wouldn't remember 5 years from now what I spent that money on, right?
A home karaoke machine.
A home karaoke machine, exactly. But I'll always remember how cool it was to sit there and listen to them talk about the Speed Force for the first time.
Cool. Very I think cool. We can take a couple more questions. You, sir, over there.
I really enjoyed your Daredevil when you were writing it.
Thank you.
Is there any ever chance that you would go back to it?
I don't think so. I find that on those rare times when I go back to something I've already done before, you're competing against not only your own work, but you're competing against people's memory of your work. Like I went back to Flash a few years ago as a favor to DC, and it just, I thought I was doing a good job, and everybody was like, well, this isn't what he was doing before. Okay. Ron.
I'll just mention, that sounded like a Dan DiDio impression. Was that? I don't like that very much.
No
it wasn't
comment.
Very good.
No comment, but don't quote me.
What happens when you run out of characters? Then, if you can't go back?
I guess
what are you
going to
do?
My career is done.
Yeah, you're just like, bye.
Bye. I'm done. I have been the luckiest guy because I've been doing this for 33 years.
Ooh.
Wow. My only job for 33 years, and I've never had to look for work, and I've never had to. I mean, it's just been. And again, that's not a brag. That's more of an amazed sort
right,
of
yeah.
Like I have no earthly idea how this happens. And people ask me all the time, how do you stay in comics for 33 years? And the answer is, I don't have the slightest notion, Just don't look down,
Answer the phone.
Yeah, yeah.
Do we have another...
Any more questions?
Any more questions? Anybody? Anything at all? Nothing
here.
Is off the table. After dark.
I saw
just a few months ago that they're going to do a possible either movie or TV show about Irredeemable. Is that
That's still in play.
Awesome.
That's still in play. I don't know where we stand. Things move glacially in Hollywood. So all the stars have to line up and so forth. But, you know, we've been in touch with Adam McKay, which is, if anything's going to get that movie made, it's the fact that it's Adam McKay.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. There's that. There's a couple of other of my projects that I've signed deals for in terms of TV and movies that we'll be announcing hopefully in the next month or so.
Okay.
So, because I knew that would happen. Once Irredeemable got caught on, you know, people caught on to that, I'm like, suddenly my agent's getting calls from all this on all this other stuff. And that's paid off well. So, yeah.
Cool. Is there one of your creator-owned titles, if it got out of the gate first, you'd be happiest about? One that you would want to break free from the pack?
Potter's Field. I really like Potter's Field. Mm-hmm. For those of you who don't know, Potter's Field was my detective comic. It was a sort of a noir detective comic. It was about Potter's Field is the name of the graveyard in New York City. This is true, where they bury all the John Does, where they bury all the people who they are not identified. And my detective was a mysterious man named John Doe, and that's all we know about him, who made it a point that no one had to die without a name. And so he would just case by case, knowing that it would take him forever, just case by case, and go down next grave, next grave, next grave, and solve these murders or solve these crimes. And then at the end of every episode, chisel a name into a tombstone and then move on to the next one.
Wow, that's a TV show
right there. Exactly, yeah.
Did you write that thinking about it as a TV show?
No, I really didn't.
You wrote it as a comic.
Sure, I'm a big fan of done-in-one comics. I'm a big fan of, like, you pay your $3.99 or whatever, you get a complete story.
Yeah,
cool. We got anything else? No? All right. Guys, a couple of things before we go. First of all, anything you want to plug coming up, Mark?
I think we've covered everything pretty much, yeah. Cool.
Okay, buy everything. There you go. we have another show coming up at 5 o'clock here with Frank Thierry. Mm-hmm. And then at 6:30, we're going to be part of Charles Soule just released a new book called Curse Words through Image Comics. We're going to be doing a staged reading of that over on the other side of the boat, so definitely check that out. And then we'll be back in a couple of days with 4 more panels.
Yeah.
Which should be awesome. Also, we do a live show in New York every Tuesday at 8 p.m., so please tell your friends about that if you're ever in the New York area, or come on by and say hello. What else do we want to plug, Pete?
You want to friend us on Facebook so you get to know about the amazing guests we have on the show.
And follow us on Twitter at Comic Book Live.
Check us out at comicbookclublive.com, nerdist.com for the podcast and more. A couple of people we want to thank. Oh,
and as you're talking about that, if you want to break into comics, I get this all the time. If you want to break into comics, I advise us to breaking in, staying in, what to do with how to build scripts, how to build stories. Just go to markwade.com.
Oh, awesome. There you go.
And there's a whole flag there for... There's a whole tag there for Comics 101, and go there.
Awesome. That's awesome. All right. A big round of applause for Mark, everybody. Yeah. Thank you to Pat Tassie for having us here, and thank you to all you guys. We'll see you very soon.
Thank you, guys. Thanks, guys. Good night.